December of 2015, I bought my second property, 120 units. So my first was a 48. Then I scaled to 120 unit property in Austin, also same submarket. So I knew the submarket very, very well. My first property I bought for $34,000 a door in Austin, Texas. And again, that was 2012. And so 3 years later, actually, when I bought my second property, that property I bought for $81,000 a door.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach of Chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, it's great to have you back in the saddle. How you doing, bro?
I'm riding that horse, my friend. Yeah? Come on, baby, let's go.
Got a couple shout-outs this week, Jake. Eli, big student, 100-unit deal, Louisville, Kentucky, on the contract, my friend. Awesome. Courtney and Julie, they got a couple of triplexes. They just closed on a little while ago. So, I mean, a lot of the students in the community are making it happen. That's what it's all about, my friend. Make it happen. Education times action equals results.
I like that. We got MIH guy in the show today as well. We got the apartment guy, Bruce Peterson. He is an award-winning real estate syndicator, TV personality, public speaker, and business coach, located in the Lone Star State. So without further ado, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure. I want to know the story. How did you become the apartment guy?
Okay, that's funny. So the actual like nuts and bolts, how I became, I started a meetup years and years and years ago. And I was sitting out front of the meetup one night. I just bought a new car. I'm sitting out there playing with my car. And I thought, you know what? I've never been a guy for vanity plates, right? For personalized license plates, but I got nothing to do. I need to kill some time. So I just looked up APT-GUY on, at the DMV, and it wasn't taken. I thought, well, let's go look at a website. There was no APT-guy.com. So I thought, holy shit. Okay. Well, I'm going to be a douchebag. I'm going to get the license plate. That's really what happened because, right, look, let's just be honest with each other. I think everybody knows this. As a syndicator, what's my job? Everybody's job every day, first of all, you're selling yourself every moment you're awake and alive. And I'm fully aware of that. And as a syndicator, especially, I am marketing myself all the time. I can make a lot of people a lot of money, but I can't do it if I can't raise the money, right? So I'm always marketing myself. So it's become the marketing arm, the personality of our asset manager that is in charge of going out, finding deals, getting them under contract, getting them closed, raising the money, and making a lot of money for people. So that's kind of how it all started.
Golden nugget. For the ooze, man, like the Ninja Turtles, like they mutated. Like I'm like, maybe Marvel Comics. I was looking for the superhero story, but that's pretty good. We'll take that. So
listen, superhero story. I wasn't bit by an apartment guy bug.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got taught how to do this by some people in my past. I had a mentor that kind of took me under their wing. I got really good at it. We won, my wife and I won the National Apartment Association's Rental Owners of the Year in 2017. So I thought, you know what? We know what we're doing. We love what we're doing. I want to help more people. So let's go out and try to raise more money, buy more properties, make a difference in more people's lives. That's really what it was. And then I just had the, the brainstorm sitting in the car waiting for my meetup. That's all.
So before the APT-GUY guy, what was the APT-GUY guy doing?
Well, no, he was syndicating, but I didn't roll this thing out until I had been syndicating for about 5 years.
No, I'm talking before. Let's go back, way back. Like you said, college dropout or okay. What were you doing? What was your background story?
Okay, so yeah, I was a college dropout. I was the kid, graduated high school in 1986 in Corpus Christi, Texas, and I barely squeaked by. I really didn't think I was going to graduate at all, but I did get it pulled together enough. And, I suck as a student. I'm a lifelong learner, but that formal education thing, sitting in a classroom, learning who Galileo was and what the capital of Zimbabwe, and even if there is a capital of Zimbabwe, I'm sure there is, none of that shit mattered to me. And I was like, this just sucks. I was bored. I hated everything about it. But so I graduate high school barely, and I think, okay, well, now I'm supposed to go to college. Well, why am I going to college? I barely got out of high school. I've never written a paper in my life, ever. I don't know. I barely know how to use the library. But I went to college because that's what you're supposed to do. Well, that was a miserable failure, right? I was going for a finance degree. I was going to become a stockbroker. I entered a want ad in Austin, Texas, and I got hired as a stockbroker. I was failing out of college, and I thought, well, son of a bitch, I figured this out. I already got the job that I'm trying to go to school to get. So I quit, and I dropped out of school, and I went to work, and I never went back to college. So we went to war in 1991, Desert Storm, and the market seized up. So I'm a stockbroker. I can't make any money. I was a kid, right? I was 23 years old. I wasn't saving any of my money. So by having that, you know, when the market seizes up, I don't make a dime. I'm going hungry. So I quit that. I went to work for a bank. I was a part-time bank teller. I made $5 an hour, 20 hours a week. So that was, went from six figures to that crap. And then I had a friend reach out to me, said, hey, I can fix all this for you. I can get you out of that. I'm like, oh, great. Anything's better than this. He pulled me into retail. I went to work for a lumber company here locally. And 18 years later, I work 110 hours a week for somebody else at a job that I absolutely detest. I'm depressed. I'm massively overweight. I'm 5'9", 240 pounds. No wife, girlfriend, kids, no dog, nothing. So I hit a wall and I kind of quote unquote retired at 43. I had saved a lot of money because of my Dave Ramsey upbringing, I guess. And I sat down one day and realized that what I was doing, I've got 50 more years of not working for anybody else and I've got no family. Okay, this is going to suck. So I started looking for a mentor. I found a mentor to take me under their wing in multifamily to show me why, first of all, houses were not the thing for me. It's a good place to get started, but I didn't need that. So I learned how to do the syndication business and buy and invest in apartment complexes. And I bought my first property in 2012, sold it 2.5 years later for a 300% return. And since, you know, we're working on our sixth deal right now in San Antonio, Texas, sold a couple of deals, partners in other deals. Again, started the apartment guy thing. So things are really, really good now, but it was a weird, spiraling, twisting path to get to where I am now.
So what would you tell people who want to get into multifamily? What should they do to get into multifamily? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who can resonate with your story.
Well, there are online boards, right? Forums that I'm part of. And you hear people light people up. You know, somebody will come on and say, hey, what do you think about this educational platform or this guru or this mentor program? And at least half the people just destroy them. Say, oh, you know, that's all BS. You don't need to spend any money. Invest that in your own deal. Okay, stop. Stop. You know, oh, you can find all the information for free. You're right. But a lot of the free information you're going to find is unqualified. The people giving you this knowledge, this information, they've never done what you're trying to do. And that's what I battle a lot on these forums is like somebody will ask a question. Another person will weigh in and go, well, I've never done it, but I've been studying it for 5 years. So this is what you do. I'm like, what are you doing? These are the people that won't pay for education. Like you'll pay, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 to $200,000 to go to college. That's probably not going to get you where you want to be. It's probably never going to make you happy. It's very rare that it does, but you're not willing to give somebody $5,000 to $10,000 to $20,000 to $40,000 for an education that can make you a millionaire in 5 years. I don't understand that thought process, but that's my biggest thing. Find somebody to help you. If you can find a free mentor, great. That's very hard to do because everybody's time is very, very, very valuable. But go out and pay for it. It's worth it. It will turbocharge. It will shorten the process for you. It will help you eliminate the big mistakes. Because in an apartment complex, if I make a mistake, it's potentially $50,000 to $100,000 or more. Don't make those mistakes, right? You know, lean on somebody that's been through it before. So find somebody that can kind of walk you through it. And if you've got to pay somebody to teach you that stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. I did that. I paid a mentor to teach me how to do it. I was a retail guy. I didn't know how to do any of this stuff. But because I invested in myself, it's the best thing I've ever done.
So our community director, Josh, loves these words, and I live by them now. You either pay to play or you seek to serve. You either pay up front or you go out and you work your ass off for a mentor and you give him value. You guide him a cup of coffee. You go out and do copies for him. You set up appointments for him. You do whatever you need to do and surround yourself. But Bruce, what I found is that when people don't have skin in the game, whether it's in an investment or their education, they value it. Free is free, my friend. It sucks. Get around an environment where you're going to be juiced up. Get around a person who can identify as a multifamily investor. Because once you start identifying as what you want to be, your habits will change. Because all of a sudden, you're starting to think as a multifamily investor, that's my identity. Well, what do I need to do? I need to start raising money. I need to start calling brokers. I need to start networking. If you don't think of yourself as one and you don't surround yourself and you don't get a mentor that does that, then you're going to be stuck. And that's why these free guys, they're there. They're free because they don't understand those concepts. You need to have skin in the game. Pay to play or seek to serve, my friend. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, it's very similar to on-site properties, right? Mm-hmm. If you let somebody move in and not give you a security deposit, even if they have a clean background, there's no reason for them to ever not walk out in the middle of the night, right? If I get you for a $200 to $400 to $600 to $800 security deposit and you bail in the middle of your contract, well, I confiscate that, right? That's the law. It's mine. You didn't fulfill your obligation. It's the same thing. So they're less likely to move out in the middle of the night because they don't want to lose their $800 or whatever they've got on file. Same thing. Somebody that has nothing to lose, you know, they can feel bad about it later that I gave up again, but you know, there was no monetary connection there. I agree with that completely, but it's also amazing how many people in the past have given me $20,000 to teach them exactly how to do what I do, and I can show them every step of everything. I'll share my Rolodex with them, everything. You give me $20,000 and you still don't do anything with it. Like, well, okay, free is not good, but some people will even give somebody a lot of money but then won't do anything with it. It's like, shouldn't that be incentive right there to not have giving me or somebody else $10,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 and then not do anything with it? That just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. Love that. What were some of your limiting beliefs when you started out? Because I mean, obviously it seemed like you had the capital. So most of the people getting into multifamily are like, oh, I don't have any money to get into it. Obviously there's owner financing, there's syndication, there's partnerships. Those ways we can dispel those beliefs. What limiting beliefs did you have when you got in?
Limiting beliefs? I don't know, and I don't mean to sound weird about this, but I don't know that I ever had any. I had to change my mindset. I've always had an abundance mentality, meaning I always knew if I helped other people, it would always work out for me, and I would help people without any expectation of return. So I didn't have that problem that I was trying to overcome. I did have the money. I knew I was smart enough, right? But I guess maybe it wasn't a limiting belief, but that was the biggest thing, is I had to get myself educated and trust the fact that everything I've ever done, I've been successful at. You know, it goes back, there was a bit of an internal stigma, right? Back in 1986 when I graduated high school, and then 88, 89, 90 when I dropped out of college, there was a huge red letter on your forehead and a stigma. It was an embarrassment that I don't have a degree. I dropped out. I couldn't cut it. So there was a little bit of that outwardly applied pressure, I think, from society that you're a loser if you don't have a degree. Well, I didn't have a degree. So that was seeping into my subconscious, into my psyche. So I had to just come out and understand that just because I don't have the degree, I don't have the formal education, I had to think back. Look, everything I've ever done, I've been successful at. I can be successful at this as well. Now, it's the reverse of a scarlet letter or a stigma. I'm proud of the fact I'm a college dropout. That's one of the first things out of my mouth when I meet somebody brand new. I do it for two reasons. I do it for the shock value, first of all, because they're like, what? And then go, yeah, you're probably thinking I'm a moron. And you know, that's okay, but I'm a college dropout. But then I want to get to the fact that you don't need to go sink $100,000 into that formal education that's going to have you in a cubicle somewhere. So that was probably my biggest thing, is just understanding that, look, I had the skill set, or I had the talent, let's put it that way. And I just needed somebody to teach me something I didn't know yet.
And what did you think your mentor, you know, top couple things you really pulled from your mentor as far as the education piece of it that you wouldn't have learned on your own?
Right. So the biggest thing I got, like when I first started looking into real estate, I thought, well, you know, like most people probably, I want to buy 2, 3, 4 houses. I'm going to pay them off over 30 years. And then that'll be my retirement. 4 houses, you know, pay me $1,000 a month. That'll pay me $4,000 a month total. And I'll live on that. Well, my mentor taught me, He said, look, why are you doing that? That's a bad idea. Let me explain to you why. So he walked me through all the reasons I should not be doing single family because it's a nightmare. It's tough. He said, you should be in apartment complexes. So that was one of the biggest things. And again, the second big thing I think was he helped me understand that you're thinking too small. First of all, not only single family, but now you're thinking a 20 to 30 unit property. No, go bigger than that on your first one. Oh, okay. And he walked me through why bigger is better. And then not only start with a 40 to 60 unit on my first property instead of a 6 to 12 unit or 24 unit, he also taught me that if you can get one property, it's easier to run 10 properties than it is to run one property. And you can help more and more and more people with the more properties you own. So don't limit yourself to the number of properties you buy. Just never be done unless you personally just like emotionally, maybe intellectually, you just want to be done. I don't want to do it anymore. But I would argue like he did with me that the bigger you get, the easier it gets. The bigger the property it is, it's easier to run a bigger property than it is a smaller property. It's easier to run 10 properties than it is to run one property. So that was the other thing, just teaching me the scale mindset.
I love that. What were a couple of your learning lessons or mistakes on that first deal, even though it doesn't seem like you made any because you made 300% in 24 months, but maybe that was a function of the market. I don't know, because at that time you might have bought at a really price point. Rents are increasing those next 2 years. What really, you know, I guess, did you learn from that first deal?
So first of all, yeah, 300% return. That was a phenomenal deal. But I did, you know, luckily I got involved at the right time. I started my education in 2011, bought my first property in 2012. But so, yeah, I rode the market up some, but I operated it pretty well. I made a lot of mistakes on my first deal. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So two big things. First thing is very superficial, but it's what I learned about a due diligence. Excuse me. Allergy problem. Sorry. I learned that when you do a due diligence, when you're doing on-site inspections, we're going to walk every single unit. I'm not going to walk 10%, 20% of the units. I'm going to walk every single one of them. What I learned on the first one, though, I did not know, and my mentor had never experienced this either, so he didn't know to tell me. I learned that plastic or fiberglass bathtubs in a 40-year-old asset can be a big, 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 big problem. So what happens is over the years, you step in a bathtub, they flex just a tiny bit. 40 years of small flexing, and they fail. So we had my first property, we had 6 different bathtubs pop. And what would happen, almost every one of them was in an upstairs unit, right? So what would happen, the people in that upstairs unit would have a leak in the bathtub, but they wouldn't tell anybody. There was a hole in my bathtub. So I'm sitting up on property one day and with my manager, and some lady comes screaming and just losing her mind, running into the office, and she's speaking Spanish. I'm like, what's going on? She goes, well, she said that, you know, it's raining in her apartment. I'm like, what do you mean raining in her apartment? She goes, well, let's go look. So we went running over there. What had happened, her ceiling fell in above her vanity while she's getting ready for work. Well, so the maintenance guy goes upstairs and he's looking around. He goes, okay, so he goes right to the bathroom upstairs and there's a quarter size hole in the bottom of the bathtub. We talked to that resident. Why didn't you tell us? Well, I just put my toe in it every time I took a bath. I'm like, are you kidding me? So 6 tubs that should have cost me $50 to $100 to patch now cost me $1,000 every time because of all the collateral damage. So I learned, check the material that the tub is made out of. If it's steel, you're usually going to be fine. Cast iron, you're almost always going to be fine. If it's plastic or if it's fiberglass, check every single tub very closely. If they have those non-slip skid things in the bottom, lift up that suction cup little mat that you stand on so you don't slip. Look under it. Make sure there's no holes. That was a big one. And then the second thing was empowering people. I hired a manager. I had never done this before. I was taught the business of an apartment complex, but I didn't know how to run an apartment complex. I didn't know the operations. So I hired an experienced manager. And I'm brilliant. I know exactly what I'm doing. My mentor told me this and that. I said, we're going to do all these upgrades. You're going to spend about $2,000 to $2,500 per unit on these 450 square foot one bedrooms. And I want you to bump the rents by $500 premiums. She goes, okay. So we do this for about 2 or 3 months. She pulls me to the side when we're walking a unit. She goes, okay, stop. I'm like, what are you talking about? Stop. She goes, quit doing this. You're overdoing all this. She said, if you will leave me alone, I will not have to spend the money you want me to spend. I will just treat it as a regular unit turn. So I'll make it clean, I'll make it safe, and I'll make it livable. And it won't be ugly, but I'm not going to upgrade it like you want. And I can still get you the rents that you want. I'm like, nah, I don't believe you at all, but I want to trust you enough to let you try it. She goes, okay. So she did. A month later, she proved me wrong. Completely wrong. She was getting the rents that I wanted. We weren't spending all this upgrade money. So what we did is we found out where our true ceiling was with the existing asset. And then we could layer on top the unit upgrades for the premium rents. But that taught me, get out of smart people's way. I was micromanaging her and making her do things that she knew didn't need to be done. So she ended up saving me a ton of money. So again, hire smart people, often smarter than you in that discipline, and get out of their way. Give them the expectation and just let them do it.
I got to give a shout out to a student, Sean M., this past weekend. It took him about 18 months to get his first deal, but he got his first deal, and he said exactly what you're saying. He's like, I said, what mistakes did you make? He goes, well, first of all, everything you said, I should have listened to, but I didn't. He goes, we closed in the deal. I didn't go through every unit. I should have walked every unit. Two of the units were trashed, and a few other things. I'm like, dude, that's how you learn. But you know what? He got the muscle now. He's got his first deal done. He's getting locking down his second deal a few months after the first one. The other thing was trying to get in there and get all his units turned at once, as opposed to like doing one or two at a time. He should have gone in there. He's like, everything you told me, I should have done. So just sometimes just taking that action and making that mistake, it's okay, because you fail forward, you learn that. You fix the property up and you move on to the next one, right? I mean, that is awesome. So when you closed on this first deal and you sold it, how long did it take you to get into your second deal?
It actually took a while because I got sidetracked. I started teaching people how to do what I had learned how to do, right? So I wasn't the most experienced guy in the world, but I still had enough knowledge for people that didn't know how to do any of it. So I got sidetracked for probably about a year and a half of teaching other people. I sold that property in 2015. I didn't buy my next property until... about the end of 2015. So I guess I took about a year off. So it's December of 2015, I bought my second property, 120 units. So my first was a 48. Then I scaled to 120 unit property in Austin, also same submarket. So I knew the submarket very, very well. My first property I bought for $34,000 a door in Austin, Texas. And again, that was 2012. And so 3 years later, actually, when I bought my second property, that property I bought for $81,000 a door. Higher rents than the first one, but still, that's a massive difference. You know, so I had to fight through the whole, the psychology of, oh, it's too expensive.
Only yes.
I paid $34,000 for the first one. I sold it for $57,000 a door. There's no way $81,000 a door makes sense. Well, but I had to trust my numbers. I ran the numbers. I'm like, but it does make sense, because rents have scaled so much. They have screened forward really at that point. So I had to just kind of get myself used to, I'm going to be paying progressively higher prices per door. You know, I'm not going to get a $34,000 door deal anymore. And if I do, I don't want it anymore. Right. Because in this market, if I find a $34,000 door deal, it's a crap deal in a crap city or town. So I don't want it. So the last one I just bought, I bought one for $97,000 a door in the same neighborhood. I bought one for $67,000, bought one for $93,000 a door. So everything I'm buying now is usually between $90,000 and $100,000 a door. So that was tough to get over, but the numbers will tell you if it makes sense.
I love Jake to share the story about us. We had the same exact thing as you did. We had scaled to 650 units. We're stuck. We just bought a deal for $45,000 a door. And for a year and a half, we didn't buy anything. I guess we're lucky we didn't buy anything, because we were scaling up the property management, switching over to portfolio. But Jake, you remember, same thing. We were buying stuff.
We lost a deal that was going to be like $27,000 a door, because we bought the neighboring property for $23,000 and we were pissed. And that would have been 170 units. That would have been great. You know, and we got really stuck in this, because we were knocking them out $30,000 a unit like this. And so, you know, man, you talked about 50,000 a unit. Are you crazy?
Yep.
50,000 a unit. That's nuts, man. And you know, we definitely lost some, you know, what would have been, you know, probably great assets, because we got in our own way.
I love that. When you go, Bruce, when you go back, you're talking about you're teaching people. Do you think that learn, do, teach mentality that you had made you become a better investor? Because when Jake and I wrote our book, we started doing this. We started really diving in and really learning how to become and teach investing. It made me at least a better investor, a better educator. Did it help you out, you think?
Oh, my God, yeah. One big thing not only teaching other people, it makes you remember all the elementary stuff, the base stuff that maybe you forget because it becomes second nature, right? It's muscle memory, but you don't always remember everything with muscle memory. So it does help to reinforce that. Now, I'm writing a book right now, and what's helping me there, again, my college drop, I don't know how to write a book, so I've got a book, a ghostwriter. I have an interview with her every Friday for a couple hours, and she pulls information out of my brain. What that's doing for me, so again, it's kind of a form of teaching. It's making me break everything down for somebody that has no idea how to do any of this. So it's reminding me that, oh yeah, I know to do this, but I didn't do that last time. Why? I completely forgot that step. So I think teaching really, really, really does keep you grounded, and it keeps you from straying too far off of what you know the system is supposed to be.
I love that. So there's a couple things on that. You're actually going into service of others. So you're helping out others, right? You're giving back. You're more the go-giver mentality. And I'm reading a book right now. It's called No Can Do. I think everybody should pick that book up. It's by Ken Blanchard. And there's three reasons why people don't learn. The first one is information overload. We're just inundated with so much crap going on. Shiny object. You read a book. Are you really learning it? You're reading it, but you're not really learning it. The second one is the negative belief. I can't do it. You only retain 10 to 15% of your what you've read because you've got that negative belief, that stinking thinking, as he says. And the third one is the lack of follow-up. What Bruce is doing right now, he's following up with the ghostwriter every week. He's writing his book, and he's getting sharper. So he's got the information overload where he's learning less more because he's only focusing on multifamily, and he's drilling down in his book. So he's learning the stuff again, and he's teaching it, and he's following up every week with the ghostwriter and with writing more content. So if you can do those three steps, everybody, pick up that book. You're going to become a better investor, because when you start doing multifamily, everyone wants to go, I want to underwrite deals. How do I manage? How do I finance? Let's time out. Let's focus on a market first. Let's choose a market. Then let's actually start trying to network and meet brokers. All right. Let's start talking how to talk with brokers. Then let's start getting operating memorandums. Then let's start, but do one step at a time. Learn less and learn it more. I think that's why people fail in this. What you were saying, the $20,000, some people don't take action because I think they get so damn overwhelmed. There's so much information in the beginning that they're not willing to give themselves 12 months like you did. And Jake, like myself, 18 months to get their first deal because they just want it to happen now. And that instant gratification is not going to serve you in this business, because it took you a while to get that 300% return. It's taken us, Jake and I, 5 years now. We've got $9 million of refi money, but 5 years is a long time horizon for a lot of people. So it will happen if you take your time. Does that make sense to you?
Of course it does. And let's put that into perspective. 5 years is a long time. No, it's not. It is for people's psyche.
Yes,
but if you think about it, the alternative, you're going to go to work for somebody else for 40 freaking years, put money into a 401k or an IRA. Come on, 5 years is nothing, guys. Quit giving up. Quit not being willing to put the time in that can make you fabulously wealthy, give you free time like you could believe. We get to travel anywhere we want, as long as we want, anytime we want, right? But yeah, you're going to have to probably hard apply yourself for 3 to 5 years. If you're 40, that's 45 years old. You're going to live to 90 or 100 nowadays. So I don't understand when people give up really quickly. But I want to talk about also, you mentioned something along the lines of negative self-speak or something like that. I forget exactly how you said it. But I sat with somebody the other day that reached out to me that heard me on another podcast. And I went to lunch with this lady. She's 19 years old. She's going to college here locally. And, she's like, I want to do what you do. So we're going through all this stuff. And I said, well, so what have you done so far? What are you working on? Are you investing now? Are you involved in real estate? She goes, well, you know what? I think what I want to do is I want to go rent somebody's place, and then I want to turn around and sublease it out. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. I guess everybody starts somewhere. At least you're taking action. She said, yeah, I was doing that for a while, and everybody I would talk to about leasing their property, all these owners want too much for their property. They're just greedy. I'm like, whoa, no, you have no right to say that. Stop. She's looking at me like, what are you talking about? I said, don't be the stereotypical millennial. I don't think that is a true characterization of millennials, but you're being that stereotype that people detest. And I'm honest with her. I said, you sound entitled. You sound lazy. And you sound like the world is out to get you. That it's that person's property. They don't owe you shit.
Woo!
They won't lease it to you for the right price to make your business thesis work. So what? Go figure out a different thing. You know, that didn't work. Okay, either find other people that maybe they will do it, or find another approach to this. I was so pissed off at her. And then later, we were talking about, you know, trying to syndicate later. She goes, well, you know, and it'll never work for me. I was like, what are you talking about? It'll never work for you.
Well, you're right.
19 years old, I'm kind of small, and I'm a girl. I'm like, you know what? You're right. Yeah. This isn't going to work for you. I don't know why you're even trying. She looked at me again, devastated. I'm like, you have got to quit talking like that. You talk like that, nobody's going to give you anything. Because you walk in the door and they see it in your face, they feel it in your demeanor, you're putting off this negative vibe that you're right, because you've told yourself, I can't do it. You're not going to be able to do it. So
she probably won't even know why people won't want to be around her.
What's that?
She probably won't even realize why people won't want to be around her. And especially someone like yourself, most people won't even be that honest with her. They'll just avoid her. Right. And so she'll continue to hang around with people that share that mindset and belief, because they're the only ones that'll put up with that bullshit. So it's probably like a thing that just snowballs on people, because the people that understand that's bullshit will reject it and just avoid. And then she'll be stuck with the people that speak that kind of crap.
Exactly. And the reason I wanted to be so hard on her, because I saw a lot of potential in this girl. She's super, super smart. Just she has her stuff together on so many levels. But I was just trying to be that brutally honest with her to snap her out of it, right? Tony Robbins discusses in his presentations to snap you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to be talking, I hope I can say this word because I want to say it, guys. Tony Robbins will be sitting there talking to everybody and he'll say, fuck. And everyone's like, ah, but it snapped them out of it, right? A lot of people get into this drone thing. They're either just continually repeating the same internal dialogue that's destroying them and their potential. And if I'm that harsh with her, it's tough love, I guess, right? I'm trying to snap through to her and people like her to teach her that, look, quit thinking people owe you anything and walk into a room. Don't be arrogant. Don't be cocky. But you have to be confident. You're a smart person. You have a lot going on. Don't tell yourself you can't do it or you won't do it. I promise.
Well, it's unfortunate. People don't know that they can affect their physiology just by that. What you're talking about is changing your state. I mean, change your physiology by standing up, breathing, smiling, shoulders back, confident. You can change right then and there. Then you can change your thoughts and then you can change your state. What you're doing is a change the state. That's what sometimes when you yell at your children, you're not really yelling at them, but just changing their state. And then from there. And then the other thing is you have to get her to raise her level. Her state or her level to think bigger and to think better. And before we go to the short answers, what I want to tell everybody is Bruce is harping on personal development. I want everyone to Google the word life coach. They should teach life coaching in college. You should go to college and be a life coach and not do anything else, because from there, you'll figure out your life. You'll figure out all that negative thinking. You'll figure out all the strategies to get better. You'll figure out all about goal setting. You'll figure out all how to set your goals, who you are, how to become the person you want to become. That's more important than learning some facts and figures and who won the war of 1812, because that's not going to pay you. What's going to pay you is developing yourself and then becoming the person you want to become. Do you want to become a multifamily investor? Well, let's become one. You have to become that investor and identify as that investor. And most people don't even understand what the hell I'm talking about, but I will tell you, it changed my life. I used to be a pizza guy. So once I took the pizza thing off, I took the chef coat off and I became a multifamily investor, it all changed for me. So,
right. So the meetup that I started 7-8 years ago, it's still going. I was there probably about, I don't go as often as I used to. I'm busier now, but about 2 or 3 months ago, I went. And toward the end of the evening, I said, let's have a discussion here. Everybody, let's go around the table. There's probably 20 to 40 of us in the room. I said, let's go around the room and let's talk about what is everybody reading? What podcasts are you listening to? Maybe not reading, if you're listening to something on Audible, whatever. What are you consuming right now?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 3% of the room had something. I'm like, God, what? I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go home and watch Jerry Springer maybe and tune into, you know, political news and get all twisted up and pissed off at the world, but you're not listening to or reading anything productive to make you a better human being. You have to invest in yourself. My wife and I spend, I don't mean this to sound arrogant or, you know, douchebaggy, but we spend over $100,000 a year on improving ourselves by going to, you know, things like you guys. You know, we went to your your mastery thing, multifamily mastery is what it was called, right? Mm-hmm. In Nashville. We went to that. We do stuff like that continually. We're always trying to make ourselves better. We learned a lot when we went and sat with you guys for that weekend, that Saturday. But we're always investing back into ourselves. And if you don't do that, I mean, this life is tough. And you're making it much, much, much harder by not trying to make yourself better. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor. Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply. All right, and we're back. We got a profit timeout there, Gino. You're the you're charging too much, man. That girl's gonna get after you, right? So, Bruce, we're talking about some really good stuff. We just ended on personal development. What is your best habit for success?
My best habit for success, first, a couple of things, I guess. You know, I have a morning routine. My morning routine is an amalgamation of a couple of things. I read the book Own the Day, Own Your Life by Aubrey Marcus, the founder of On It. And then Hal Elrod, The Miracle Morning, that kind of stuff. Have a morning routine. It makes a massive difference. So I wake up every morning. I have my little cocktail that Aubrey taught me, right? Water with salt and lemon. I have 12 ounces of that in the morning. Then I read. I try to journal, right? I'm not really good at journaling. I can't stick with that very well. But then you have to have movement. So I don't know if you can see behind me, but I've got my goofy little Tony Robbins rebounder behind me now, right? So I've got my little personal trampoline.
You bounce.
I'll do that in the morning just to get my blood moving, and then go outside, get a little bit of sun, the vitamin K thing or vitamin D thing. So have a morning routine because it sets you up for the rest of the day. I don't read emails until all that stuff is done.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, really easy to sit down and just want to look at sports score. I'm a big fantasy guy, right? Fantasy football and baseball. It's easy to get sucked into fantasy results from the day before real quick and then get stuck in Facebook and Instagram. And then before you know it, your day's gone, right? So I get all this stuff out of the way. And then something that I got from Andy Frisella, the MF CEO, went to Grant Cardone's 10X a couple of years ago in Vegas, and he talked about his Power Five. He said, every single day I have a Power Five. And what that is five things that I need to get done today. Don't put down, go to the gym, because you do that every day. So that's not fair. You know, make it some actionable things that you need to get done today to move your business, your life forward. He said, as soon as those five things are done, I'm done. He said, if I'm done by 9 o'clock in the morning, I'll go shoot guns for the rest of the day. He said, that's what I like to do, or go work on my cars. So the Power Five, don't feel you have to fill every single moment of every single day to be productive, to be a quality human being, right? Some people are like that and they drive themselves nuts. So I purposely leave 20 to 40% of my week for me. I go hang out at a bookstore. I'll go read magazines that have nothing to do with what I'm trying to do, but I'm gleaning information from all different mm-hmm. industries, from all kinds of different people, mindsets. I'm always, always, always reinvesting in me. And that's the biggest thing for me, is just have that quality time.
So Bruce, you said that you don't like to journal. And one of the reasons why you might not like to journal getting into that habit is because you said before, you're not a writer. So if you don't identify as a writer and you don't think you're a good writer, you're going to put that habit off. But once you've written your first book, see if you can shift your mindset and shift yourself to say, I am a writer. I wrote a damn good book. And maybe that will take you to create the habit, because I have the same problem journaling every morning. What I do is before I have my cup of coffee, I'll journal 4 or 5 lines. I've been doing that. I read the Atomic Habits book. It took me a good couple months to get that done. And it's nothing major, just a few lines. And as I'm doing it and getting better at it, I'm going to continue to journal a little bit more. And it's good because it reflects on the day before. It gives you the gratitude for the day after. You don't have to write anything powerful. Just say, I'm just really grateful to have kids, grateful of the relationships, grateful we closed in a 200 unit deal, whatever it is. But I bet you once you start identifying that your book is done, it might come a little bit easier to you.
I hope so, because I see the value in it. I just have a hard time doing it. That and the other thing was meditation. Not really good at it. I'm very hyper, very high energy. It's true. Meditating, they're really, really, really difficult for me to do, to just sit still and try it. I mean, it's super powerful the days that I do it, but I just don't take the time to do it very often. Mm-hmm.
What about a tip for scaling your business? You were talking before about how you got into it, but you didn't know how to operate an apartment complex. Can you give the listeners a tip that you incorporated into your business as you're scaling?
So again, the biggest thing about scale, I was talking to another friend of mine that he has started in buying into, let me see if I get this straight, the early childhood development centers, you know, like those kind of preschool type things or whatever that you go drop your kids off at. And he said, you know, we opened our first one and it was a lot of work. Like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm sure it was. They're learning an industry. He said, we're about to open our second one. No, they had just opened their second one. He's like, look, I think we're done. You know, we're going to run these as profitably as we possibly can. They will be profitable. But look, you know, one was X amount of work. Two was X times two. I can't see scaling. You know, I say, okay, look, there's your problem. It's like everything. The bigger you get, I said, I'm not in that industry. I don't know anything about that company, but I'm sure business is business is business, right? You get to your third, fourth, and fifth location, I promise it's going to get easier. You can't see that right now. It does not just, it's not a linear growth or an exponential growth. Well, I guess it would be, this is a wrong terminology, my college dropout brain, but a exponential growth or whatever. So the bigger you get, the easier it gets, because you can start hiring corporate staff, remove yourself from the day-to-day grind. And now you're up here providing vision, providing leadership and direction. That is your job, is to set culture now. That's it. That is my role in my company. So that's the biggest thing. Scale as quickly as you can safely. Don't get stupid with your growth, because then you're going to fall flat on your face. But hire smarter people. I keep going back to that. Hire smarter people. Tell them what you expect. Empower them and get out of their way. If you don't let go, you can't grow. Go.
Bro, it's real funny, Bruce. I've got a terrific wife, and that's what I tell everybody. It's like having kids. Your first couple kids are really hard, but as you start having 3, 4, 5, and 6, man, it gets a lot easier. Not in the pocketbook, but it gets easier and it gets a lot more fun. So having a big family is like growing a business, man. It's rewarding.
Well, that's why you had 36 kids. It was just practice. The 36th is finally going to work out.
Dude, I'm getting better. You know what I'm saying? The first couple are a little damaged, but you know what? I'm getting better. So.
I hope they're not listening to this.
I hope not, dude. But I'm telling you, it's really weird that you say that. And I equate having a large family to multifamily. The first couple are really hard. You don't know what the hell you're doing. You get this little infant. You've got this 30-unit building. How the hell am I running this thing? But then you figure it out. Jake, what was that quote from Game of Thrones? You don't know how to ride a dragon until you ride a dragon, right? You don't know how to buy an apartment complex until you have an apartment complex. You don't know how to raise a kid until you start raising a kid. It's the same thing. And don't be afraid about it. It's never the right time to have a family. It's never the right time to buy an apartment complex. Now it's the height of the market. Same BS we're always hearing. Don't buy it at 90 a door. Well, crap, I didn't buy it at 90 a door. Now it's worth 105 a door. So it's all the same stuff. Get the noise out of your head. Focus on what you want. And focus on what goals you want to achieve. Fall in love with the process and the system of having them. Fall in love with having a big family and spending time with them, and you'll be successful at it.
Well, that was important too. Fall in love with the process. If you don't fall in love with the process, it's okay. This isn't for you. Just keep going. Find that thing that you do enjoy the process. I love everything about what I do, or I wouldn't do it, right? I would just invest in somebody else's syndication, or maybe I would still syndicate, but I wouldn't have my own management company, because that doesn't give me energy, right? Mm-hmm. Find the things that you really, really, really get energy from that really kind of light a fire inside of you. And you're not going to ever want to stop doing that stuff. So you just got to find what works for you. And syndication might not be your thing. You know, I teach people, out of 100 people that I might start coaching, only 10 of them are probably really, really, really cut out to do this. And that's part of my job, is trying to teach you or try to help you navigate that, to go, oh, you know, I like the thought of syndication, but it's just not who I am. It's not my personality. So you just got to find what works for you, how you're wired and what's going to click for you, and just go do whatever that thing is.
Appreciate you commenting on the lifelong learner and the amount that you invest in education. Have there been any books that you've picked up recently that you want to recommend to the audience?
Some really fundamental things that I give away to a lot of the young people around us. My daughter's 19 right now. And so a lot of her friends are struggling, trying to figure out life, trying to figure out, how do I find my passion? I don't know that you need to find your passion at 19 years old. You know, work toward that, but don't expect to find your passion until you're in your late 20s, late 30s, or late 40s. The average billionaire does not figure out what their passion is, their life's calling, until they're 43 years old.
It's funny. That's
powerful shit, right? Make me realize I quit working 110 hours a week in retail at the age of 43. And I read that. I was like, I'm right on path. So I felt really good about that. But so what I give to the people that I'm trying to help are three books. The Miracle Morning. What is it? The 5-Day Weekend by Garrett Gunderson. And Wealth Can't Wait by David Osborne. They're very, very, very fundamental books, but they're a good way to get your base set. Now, there's the obvious, of course, Think and Grow Rich, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Unleash the Power Within, I think is what it was called by Tony Robbins, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Everybody knows those, right? These others talk to you about why it's okay to be wealthy, why you should strive to be wealthy. You owe it to yourself, you owe it to your family, you owe it to your community and everybody around you that you can have a positive impact on. Those are the three big books that I'm on right now. Some others that I've read recently, 0 to 1, I think it was called, I just read, was fantastic. Right now, I had just read Sell or Be Sold by Grant Cardone. I didn't want to read it, but I was looking for the next book. I like him, but he's not my personality type. And I'm turned off by that stereotypical sales guy. I hate that person. Not that person. That's really hard. I hate that role. We'll put it that way. But I read it anyways. It was an amazing book, an absolutely amazing book. And then the other one that I'm reading, I don't know where it is right now. Here it is. Brave New Work by Dignan. I heard him on Gary Vaynerchuk the other day on his podcast. And he talks about getting rid of red tape and bureaucracy in your organizations and how to rethink the way, you know, the org chart looks. Do you have to have an org chart at all? And he walks through case studies of brilliant companies that are trying to reimagine the way we work. So I know that was a long answer, but that's a lot of the books that I'm either reading or recommend to everybody.
Nice. What project are you excited about right now?
Well, you know, a couple of things, the book. That's probably the most exciting thing. Now, you know, the easy answer is, you know, we got a 200 unit under contract that we're working through right now in San Antonio, but that's just another property. They're always fun. I love everything about all of the properties. But the biggest thing for me right now is probably the book, because I'm not, you know, I've learned by talking to other people that have written books, because I know a lot of guys that have written books and they said, look, don't write it to make any money. Unless you're J.K. Rowling or somebody like that, you're not going to make a lot of money on this. It's my way of trying to help people. Again, you know, my book is How to Construct a Syndication Business the Right Way. And I'm just being me in the book, which means, right, I've got a little bit of a colorful way that I talk. I cuss a little bit, but I'm cussing in the book. And again, if by the end of the book, and I'm going to say this multiple times in the book, if after reading this book, you decide I want no part of this, well, then I've been successful.
Mm-hmm.
I helped you understand what it really, really, really means to be a syndicator. Just not all the hype and hoopla at the front of the room when you hear people just giving you rainbows and lollipops and unicorns. There's a lot of crap that can and will go wrong if you do enough of these deals. And I want to talk to you about all of that stuff. I want to show you why this is a phenomenal way to make a living. It's a phenomenal business to have. But it's really hard. It's really stressful. There's a lot of liability. If you can't handle being served at your front door by somebody that's suing you for some reason, don't do this. So that's the stuff that I'm trying to get across to people and trying to help people with. So I'm super excited about the book.
Man, that is some powerful stuff there. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you? Where's the book going to be when it comes out? All that good stuff.
Well, the book, that'll be on my website. Just go to apt-guy.com. I'm okay on social. I always screw up what the handles or tag or the names are. It's APT-guy on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook. I've got all this stuff, and I think some of them are at apartment guy, some of them are apartment-guy. Every platform seems to have its own way of structuring it, so I don't really know exactly what to tell you on all the different ones, but the best way to follow me is look me up on Instagram. Or go to the website. The website will talk to you about the deals we've done, the deals we're doing, the resources that we have to offer. So that's the best ways.
Yeah, four houses. Now let's get into multifamily. 30 units. Now let's go to 100 units.
Yep.
A lot of mindset in this one, G-Dad. What do you think?
I could probably do a whole podcast on recapping this thing, but I'll try to keep it short here. The first thing is learn, do, teach. And if you can do that, you'll become a better investor and you'll start serving people. The second thing is be aware of information overload, be aware of the negative belief, and you have to follow up when you learn stuff. Go out, meet up, start sharing it with people. That's why when you teach it, you're sharing it, you're following up with yourself. The third thing that Bruce said was marketing for deals and marketing for dollars. That's what the business of real estate is. Don't worry about the tenants and the toilets initially, and you should worry about that, but your job as the business is you need to get those deals and you need to get investors. Focus on those two tasks and that'll make you a lot of money. The next thing that Bruce said that I liked was get out of people's way that are smarter than you. Let them do their job. Don't micromanage them. Obviously, when you're learning the process, you're might have to get into that a little bit. But as you can see, when they're turning you apartment units and you think you need $5,000 and they're doing it for $1,500, that's a big learning lesson for you. And that, I guess, is check your ego at the door. Don't let your ego get in the way of you and think that you're smarter than everybody else. Hire those smarter people. And I think the last one is, you know, with the recommendation with the books, money can't buy happiness, but poverty can't buy anything. So let's put it at that. You're not making money to become rich. You're making money to use it to buy stuff that you need and to, you know, to fulfill your life. And, you know, as my dad used to say, you know, poor people, they're not building the churches. They're not building the schools. They're not giving back. So I think it's our duty to make money and actually to enjoy it and actually to give it back to others. So. Is that quick enough, Mr. Stenziano?
You know, you're about 20 minutes over on this episode, but we'll take it. So, Bruce, we appreciate you today, man.
Thanks, Bruce.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.